You are listening to the In Context podcast.
So is this video or just sound?
Both. So
I better look interested then.
Yeah.
All right.
That'll be hard.
Okay. Thank you, Ian. Hi.
How are you doing, Mez? Good to have you.
Good.
So it's the first time we've had a pastor, director of a ministry organisation, author, you're a podcaster, husband and father, and a foster carer. So what do you do in your spare time, bruv?
I'm a superhero. I'm plastic pants man.
Yeah. Are you looking for something else to do? Are you bored?
I know. When people say it like that, it does sound like I do a lot, but I'm sitting here thinking I don't do that much. So, but probably most of it's just words.
Yeah. No, I see you do quite a lot of work, to be honest. Yeah, you're used by my wife when she thinks I'm being lazy as an example. So when I say I'm tired, she often says, "Well, how do you think Mez feels?" I'm like,
I'm used by you as an example to your wife of what a good husband you are. So I get used both ways, right?
Yeah. We both use you, don't we?
Yeah, praise the Lord for that. Did you ask her, by the way, whether you could come out and play with me this week?
I have, yeah. She said I can, so I'll have to. So I'll probably come out, play out on Sunday.
Sunday to Friday is. Yeah.
Adhering to the COVID-19 rule.
Obviously. Yeah. Obviously. We're clear about that.
Yeah. But no, looking forward to it. Should be good to meet up to do some work, because we're allowed to meet up to do work.
No, I'm seriously got to write. This flipping book of mine's turned into a monster. Look at this. That there is my actual notes.
Flipping there. Wow. So is that the book for the FIEC that you're doing jointly with them?
Well, yeah, it's not for the FIEC, but it's a book that the FIEC helped partly sponsor. They sponsored the research for it. Mm-hmm. So basically, we paid a guy over 2 years, a PhD student who's a specialist in whatever, to research the council estates and schemes in Great Britain, and then London as a separate entity. And so, as you can imagine, he came back with a lot of data.
Was anything surprising, or was pretty much everything?
Not that much surprised. I was surprised at the number. So there are 38,500 council estates across the UK. And you would be lucky if you found 100 gospel preaching churches.
Yeah, is that right?
It's a mess out there. And then I suppose we knew the north was bad, but this north, including Middlesbrough and all up the coast, we found what researchers call a corridor of spiritual deprivation.
Right.
Just communities decimated by all sorts of things, you know, fishing industries, mining towns, etc. Manufacturing centres just left since the 80s, really. And when business and employment went, it appears so did the churches. And so they're pretty much ghost towns. So it doesn't make for great reading.
Yeah.
But there's some encouragements, right? So the book is just the FIEC paid for the research bit, and then I'm sort of writing the rest. So it's cool. We're hoping it's going to be used as a textbook, as well as a sort of call for more people to engage in ministry in our communities, right?
Do you think it would be helpful as a tool for funders to look at as well? Do you think that might help?
Yeah. I mean, what I'm trying to do is produce something that's saying, basically, look, here's the hard facts. I'm not going to look at every stat. In fact, the stats will all be in an appendix in the back of the book. So if you're in England or Scotland or Wales or Ireland or London, you can look at your own section and extrapolate what information you want to extrapolate. And then the rest of the book is me just setting the scene. What's the current plight today? What's the working class? What is working class? Looking at those questions, because everybody disagrees on that. What the Bible says about these issues. Looking at where the church has gone wrong, where the church can go right. Looking at theological education. How can we make that more accessible for people from our communities? And there'll be articles and essays and life examples from a range of churches and people and church leaders, not all of whom will agree with me, But I want it to be a book that's robustly, that you can, that's robust, it's got different perspectives, but can be used as a workbook for anyone from theological students to people interested in ministry. And yeah, definitely be a help to people who are going to fund or will hopefully fund planning. So we'll see.
I was chatting with Nathan just the other day, and I was saying that there's, as much as people and I have in the past complained about the unfair allocation of funding to churches, they do have a difficult job to try and understand what is worthy of funding and what is less worthy, such as there may be a large church in an area doing very little that gets a lot of funding, or there may be a small church doing a lot which might not seem worthy. And it's very difficult to find a scale which shows what's worth backing and what isn't, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And there's just like, and particularly in our end of the market, here's the problem for guys who are ministers in our end of the market, and I call it that on purpose because that's what it is. Ministry to the poor is a multi-million pound industry. Mm. And our end of the market is swamped by hundreds of parachurch organizations, countless, that Christians with a heart for the poor plow their money into, and often churches. And often what they don't realize that they're doing is they think they're supporting ministry in our communities, and to some degree they are, but often they're doing it to the neglect of supporting pastors like us and others who are slogging away on the ground. But they're not as sexy as a parachurch organization. They don't have the great media savvy, you know, people. They don't have a great website presence and you know, people who can take trips and do wonderful PowerPoint presentations and fundraise, and then so often we get left behind. So I'm hoping the book will address some of those problems, but not only address it, but offer realistic solutions going forward. In fact, I'm getting one of the guys, I'll ask one of the guys who's been quite helpful to both of us, that I forget his name now, he's involved in funding. I think the guy's got cancer. He's got cancer.
Yeah, Jeremy.
Yeah, I got him to write, you know, have a look at some of my findings and write an article about how does he think funders should respond to what I'm saying, and how can we help them to not just criticize them, which is often what I get accused of. You're telling us what the problem is, you never offer any solutions. So I'm hoping the book will say, look, here are some problems, long-standing ones. Here are some solutions that we all think about, local churches, Christians who give, theological institutions and giving organizations. If we want to tackle the problem properly, then let's understand it's a problem and stop denying it. And let's look at the various people who hold the reins of power, including us now, thankfully, with influence, and say, right then, what can we do to make the situation better? So I'm really hopeful for it. I honestly am. So a lot of people think I'm going to write the book and just throw hand grenades at middle-class people. And that's not the intention at all, actually. You know, we're way past that. Mm-hmm. And we've got to work together on this. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, again, that's something we were discussing the other week, is I think there was a time where we needed to make a big noise to get attention to the needs. And I think now that people are listening, it's a time to, like you say, give answers, give solutions to the problem, yeah, and not just highlight the problem. So grateful that we're getting the opportunity to do that. Looking forward to this book as well. Hopefully this will help with some change. But something that I'd realised, because I'd been making a loud noise for a while and then I was aware of these problems, and then all of a sudden, through 20 schemes and 20 schemes inspired, my life became a little bit easier. Funding was a big issue for me. So when I came under 20 Schemes Inspired and my salary was looked after, our church started being able to do what we wanted to do and was reach the community instead of traveling the country trying to look for support.
Yeah, exactly.
It took a big burden off me. And then I started to get a little bit comfortable, and it was a bit of, I'm all right, Jack. The temptation was just to think, oh well, I'm getting paid. Do you know what I mean? I can do my ministry. I'll just sit back and back off now. But again, speaking to some other lads in my position, like the lads down in Cleckheaton and in Leeds and across the north of England, started feeling a little bit convicted, and started thinking, well, how can we as a church help with this problem? How can we play our part? How can we support people in the same way that you and 20 Schemes have supported us at New Life Church? So that's why we looked at setting up Medhurst Ministries, which is basically a rip-off of 20 Schemes. You know, like when you go abroad and you get the cheap Gucci watches and stuff like that, they last about 2 weeks. We're like that type of organisation at the moment. But what we are hoping to do is to develop into something probably not as big, but something as useful for the lads in the north of England. So does that book kind of highlight a need for what we're doing?
Hang on, I'm just making a note. I'm just making a note of what you said about how the money we got you through 20 Schemes, I forget all the names now, we've got everything, it's not Retrain, Inspire, helped you focus on the church and not have to run around the country making money. And I think that will be an interesting little article for you to write. Yeah. For the books, I'm just making a note. So sorry, ask you a question again.
Yeah, so what I was saying was, because my life became easier, the temptation was to like back off now. I'll stop making waves. We're getting looked after. We've got a couple of supporters from down south.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A big supporter up in 20 Schemes. So I'll just keep sweet, keep my mouth shut, and I won't rock the boat. But then I'm looking at these other lads in the north of England, like Graham and Cleckheaton, a church of nine people. Every couple of months he's worrying about where his salary is coming from. And I just felt that conviction that, do you know what, I still need to be involved helping these lads out. So that's why we thought about Medhurst Ministries. And because I think the biggest problem I had was feeling isolated. And it was only these little breaks up to Scotland and getting involved with the 20 Scheme lads that made me feel part of a team. And that was really what helped me get through the difficult times until we were in a more stable position. So I was just wondering, does that book highlight the need for something like a 20 Schemes in the north of England? Is Medhurst Ministry something that you...
I mean, the book is not going to emphasise that particularly, but when we use one of your... when we use your church as a focus church in one of the chapters or a couple of the chapters, I'm going to use like an example from each sort of... I can't use every example, but I'm going to point to a couple of examples in England. I'm looking at an Asian church and how they struggle because, you know, they're pretty underrepresented. Look at your church in the north and maybe a church or so in London. And that's when you'll get the opportunity to say, rather than for me to say it, is for you on the ground to say it. And I just put it on the pages of the book. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Otherwise, I can just say, well, they need this in Middlesbrough, they need that and that. But I don't really know what they need in Middlesbrough. I'm your pal. We love you. We support you because we trust that you know what they need in Middlesbrough. So in that sense, the book will have it. It's interesting, Medhurst Ministries, been a knockoff of 20 Schemes. 20 Schemes is a knockoff of... 20 Schemes is a knockoff of flipping Thomas Chalmers' work in the late 1800s in Scotland when he built, basically, he was a posh flipping liberal Church of Scotland dude from a very rich family, got converted, led the Free Church, actually. He's the one who was involved in starting up the Free Church College and leading the Free Church, starting the new denomination. But one of the things he did was, in Glasgow, he started a project to rebuild 20 churches in 20 of Glasgow's poorest communities. And so really that's a rip. We've not created anything new, but I love it when rippers off. It's great. We've got rip-offs all over the world. Sort of two of the most notable ones that are really going at the minute is one's in Canada and one's in Baltimore, which is an absolute that's a rough place.
Is that Joel's church?
Yeah, in the States. And so they're not doing exactly what we're doing, but I think what you're doing is they're copying the principles. And so just for you, just explain to us, at least to people, my listeners, because our listeners come from everywhere who'll tune into this, who don't know what Medhurst Ministries is and what you're trying to achieve. That might be helpful.
Yeah, so Medhurst is particularly, we took the name Medhurst from a guy called Thomas Medhurst who was a working class man who got saved, and as soon as he was saved, couldn't stop himself from preaching the gospel. And this upset some of the congregation in the church. They were like, how is this uneducated man going to do anything but bring shame upon the gospel? So they asked Spurgeon, who was the pastor of his church, to stop him. So he approached the guy and said, look, our congregation wants me to stop you preaching in the street. They're worried that you'll bring shame to the gospel. So he said, if you want to stop me preaching, you're going to have to chop my head off. So he said, I can't do that, but what I can do is I can train you. So that's where Spurgeon's College was set up. It was set up to fund this guy. This guy was offered a stipend. He said, no, I can earn money bivocationally as a rope maker. So Spurgeon used the money that was raised for him to bring in more students. So even Thomas Medhurst used his skills to help support the college. And that again, is something that was lacking for me. Most of the lads in the north who get saved go down south to train. They meet a nice southern girl and they stay down south. And so there's very few pastors in the north, and the ones that are called to ministry end up usually down south ministering. So our aim was, first of all, was to start some training college, a bit like the Ragged in the north of England, to train and support pastors so they stay in the north of England, firstly. But then secondly, we started looking at the support that you offered me and the training that you offered to existing pastors. So what we're hoping to do is pretty much support existing church plants and help with revitalization. And then eventually, as we grow, hopefully we can be a partnership with churches that plant other churches in the forgotten towns and villages of the north of England, in particularly that corridor you were talking about. From Hull to Berwick, we have a huge coastal area which is impoverished. Like you say, there's a place like Bridlington, which the only employment was the Dairy League cake factory and fishing. And then the fishing's been decimated. So there's like generations of unemployment on these beautiful coastal villages, which were pretty much self-sufficient 50, 60, 70 years ago. So again, just basically we want to highlight the need in the north. We want to encourage people to come and plant and be gospel workers in the north and support those who are already doing ministry up here. So they're the three main things that we're looking at doing.
And there's also overlap, isn't there, with Church in Our Places? You're the European director. Okay, I'll give you the titles now. You're the European director of Church in Our Places, which is basically Acts 29's version of 20 schemes, but around the world, which again aims to equip and train pastors. This is worldwide. Hopefully link them up with partner churches, particularly in America, looking to financially help churches. And so there's a lot of crossover between 20 schemes, Church in Our Places, Medhurst Ministries, and all these other ministries. And I think that's only a good thing, right? I think that's positive for the kingdom. Because you've got, what, 8 or 9 lads?
Yeah.
We're going to meet up at some point soon through Medhurst. And
yeah, yeah, COVID permitting, that we've had to cancel, I think, 2 retreats. Hopefully we'll get one out this year.
There's plenty of need out there. I basically think we're going to pick up every council estate guy, particularly the younger ones. I mean, I've given up with the older generation. They don't want to know. A lot of the evangelicals. But these young lads who are going out now in pastoral ministry in their late 20s, 30s, even 40s, we'll pick them up. But there's so few of them because anyone's doing ministry. So we're hoping that, you know, it'll grow as more people. I'm hoping this book is the rocket to young people thinking they want to go into do some sort of mercy ministry, but instead say, don't do that. Come and train to be church planters with us or gospel revitalizers. So that's how I think, I'll hope that we grow both our ministries, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 20 schemes is massive right now anyway, but.
Well, I think it hits two demographics. It hits the middle-class lads who have been churched, who were excited. We were talking to a lad called Sam Anderson, who's at Steve Neal's church in Oldham, and he said he was excited about the gospel need and the vision and the gospel opportunities and wanted to do something different. So he was inspired by the ministry. But then there's also working-class lads like me and you who, in some churches, would find it difficult for gospel opportunities where hopefully we can offer opportunities to people who don't fit the typical mould of pastors or church planters.
Yeah. And to be clear, what we're not saying to people, and we're watching this, I keep banging this drum, is we're not saying we only want to help working class guys in working class communities. We're saying we want to help all people, regardless of their cultural background, who want to work in our communities. But don't go down south to flipping whatever it's called, O'Call. What's it called? O'Call? O'Kill? One of them's
Toad Hall.
Don't go down there to get trained. Come and get trained by us.
Yeah.
With just as much theological acumen as these guys. And actually, one of the reasons we started the Ragged School of Theology, and said, you know, I mean, three of our faculty have got at least master's degrees.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And so people say, oh, yeah, but, you know, you need to go and get qualified by a proper trainer. That's a load of nonsense. Come and get qualified to do ministry on council estates by guys who live on council estates, come from council estates, do ministry on council estates, and can both educate you and show you how to do it properly. So I'm quite excited for the future for that. And we've not launched Ragged School publicly yet because we're still in the process of developing it, but we're pretty close. Our three-year curriculum now is pretty spot on.
Mm.
And our partnership with the union, hopefully, will go from strength to strength. But anyway, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you've got some really good lecturers on that course as well, haven't you? I think two of the best I've seen anyway.
Not you and me.
Yeah.
I agree.
If we don't say it, no one else will.
No, we'll say it. We're the best.
Yeah, well, we've got the best pastor and preacher in the world anyway, according to my daughter Esther. So we were sat.
Obviously, yeah. Thanks. She's the daughter, she's like the daughter I never had. I've had two daughters.
Yeah. You sat there, Rachel's talking about Paul Washer being amazing, then Esther went, no, he's not the best. And I was waiting for her to say, Dad is, and she went, Mez is.
Trust me. I get no love in my own house. So. I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. She's everyone's fan but me until it's Christmas time.
Christmas time, birthdays, or have we got any spare cash, Dad?
Yeah. Sorry, your PA's just text me to ask me if we're doing a podcast.
You say no. Say, where is it? Go on, say, where is he? I'm absolutely raging. I've been sat here for 20 minutes like a numpty.
She's on holiday, isn't she?
No.
Isn't she?
Text us and she'll text me and that'll be good. We'll have a bit of fun with this.
Just text, where is he? I think it's because what she's done is...
We're men in our 40s and look at the state of us. Childish or what?
Yeah, I'd like to blame COVID, but...
I was about to say that. I would blame lockdown, but I'm an immature git at the best of times.
Yeah, I think what happened was I've sent the link out and so has Peter. So
Yeah, no, they did. I got like three different links. I'm like, I'll just go with yours.
Yeah. So yeah, we're on it. So the problem is, I don't think Anna trusts either of us. She probably trusts me a little bit more than you, but
wow, that is fair. That's fair.
Oh, good. Yeah, so I've kind of forgot what we were chatting about now. But I think the tide is changing, isn't it? I think people are listening and opportunities. I mean, I still can't get over what. So you reckon there's about 38,000 council estates without churches, and is that about right?
There's about 38,500 council estates in the UK.
Yeah.
What we mean by that is they're designated by the statisticians as anywhere from 1,500. So it can have an estate can be anywhere from 1,500 to 20,000. Some people, so
yeah.
And so they would say that there's 38,500 of these. Now, I can't remember off the top of my head if that's the actual full number. That's not the. There's more council estates in that.
Yeah.
Our research covered that amount, so we covered the worst 10% in the country.
Yeah.
And so you know, but what we found is people say, "Oh well, my work falls into the." Bottom 5 percentile, you know, we're in the top 5% or the top 10% or the top.
Yeah.
And I was saying to somebody there, listen to me, all our research has shown is this: the difference between a church, a community that falls into the 1% most deprived in the UK, mm-hmm. and let's say the 50% most deprived in the UK, isn't 49%. The mm-hmm. interest is just so negligible, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
They're both deprived. This one is just. More deprived than the other one. So people go, well, I got phoned up and asked by a church, go, I've got this church plant, we would love 20 schemes to be involved in, but we're only in like, we're only in Scotland's most deprived, we're only in like the bottom 25%. And I'm like, well, the bottom 25% isn't like 20 times more well off than the bottom 5%. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't work like that. So this is why these stats can be, and I say this in the book, can be a bit misleading. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Everybody's in a rush to say, we're the most, we were joking about this, weren't we? We're the most deprived. Yeah. And the only one that can say with any shadow of a doubt, most deprived town in the UK is your town. Mm. Across the board, it's an absolute shocker. You fill basically the top three slots all on your own. Mm. And that includes London.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but I think with the figures, I think people get a bit like, you know, they think, well, if it's the top 5%, if you're in the 25%, you're much richer than, do you know what I'm saying? But you're not. You might just have a better bus service. Or someone can have the most. You can live in the most deprived council estate. Let's pick Oldham with our pal Steve Neil, right?
Yeah.
And it is the most deprived council estate in the country. Mm-hmm. But because it's in a town surrounding it that's richer, that pulls its median up. And that's where I think the confusion lies. Oldham's the most deprived, or is Middlesbrough? No, Oldham has the most deprived estate. But Middlesbrough is poorer across the board in a wide range. Do you see what I'm saying? So these are the sorts of things that, trust me, this book's been 2 years in the writing. You've got to try and, because statistics can be used to do anything.
Yeah.
So you've got to, I'm trying to ensure that, one, it's understandable, and two, there's parity. Has she texted you back yet?
Yeah, she put... What's she saying? Don't know. I messaged him at 11:30, and Peter set up the call, but I haven't heard back.
Hang on, and I'll say, am I doing this podcast or what? Got another call at 2:00 for another scheme.
Yeah.
So we've got something like 8 or 9. When lockdown ends, we've got like 8 or 9 things just to go.
Yeah, wow. So that's on top of what you've already got?
Yeah, so there's like, we've got 10 schemes now,
mm-hmm.
but we've got a waiting list.
Are you going to change your name to 30 schemes, do you think? Or?
No, somebody was asking that. No, we're 20 schemes, I think. I think, let's just see what happens. Because we've broadened out, you know, we've got 20 schemes music, 20 schemes publications now. We're going to start publishing these Bible commentaries, 20 schemes... Retrain for geezers like you. No, that you're inspire, not retrain. 20 scheme retrain is what we've just about to start up, opening
out with a cafe and everything.
More businesses, yeah, and creating employment opportunities for people from our communities. So,
yeah,
things are a bit mad, but good. It's encouraging.
Yeah, yeah. And again, encouraged. I've had the opportunity to chat with some lads in Nigeria through the Church in Our Places calls. I mean, that's probably been one of the highlights of lockdown for me is when I'm feeling sorry for myself, thinking I'm in a hard place, listening to them when there's a riot going on outside the front door and police
are shooting. Those guys are warriors, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Big cheesy grins on the face.
Oh, yeah.
So thankful for the tiny support that we offer them. Yeah, they're just so thankful and love the Lord.
That's going to be one of the hardest things about lockdown for me. I like traveling, like going over to Africa and Brazil and that, and seeing these guys in the communities and you know, meeting with them and encouraging them and training them and teaching them. So I'm actually looking forward to getting back and doing that again. That's one of the best. I think we've got something like 200 guys being trained around the world right now during lockdown. So we've got praise the Lord for that. Like you say, you know, the tide is turning and we want to be at the head of it. I mean, I used to tell you this years ago, you just used to look at me like I was talking shit, which I probably was. And now you've got lads doing it to you.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I was just saying, just trust me, hang on in there, lads, it won't be long. But it's hard, though, isn't it? It's hard when you're in the midst of it and, yeah, you've got your own sin, you've got...
Then you're fighting for your life. You've got no money, your skin, no one seems to care. The evangelical church is indifferent to you. If you say anything and you've got a bad attitude, you've got an attitude, I mean, it's absolutely brutal.
Mm.
You know, and I think one of the ways, particularly, like the, you know, that, you know, one of the reasons we set up Inspire is we've got to try and find ways we can get money to guys.
Yeah,
we can get a guy's salary stable. It does take a lot of pressure off his life, his family, his ministry. Mm. You know, otherwise, someone once said to me, why are you always traveling around everywhere? That church minister, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, give me the money and I'll tell you right now, I'll stay at home. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'll do it. I hate it, but you know, it's a brutal job, but it's got to be done, hasn't it?
Mm.
UK churches are just not giving money to our ministries, are they? That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a kind of there's been a tradition of where the money goes to, and it kind of stays that way as well. And even I was surprised that there were so many trusts out there that I hadn't even heard of, and I was shocked that nobody had actually bothered to tell me that they were there. So when I've been traveling the country and saying I'm struggling for finances, 5 years later, I find out that these churches have been accessing the fund that they could have mentioned to me. So just even having the knowledge of where to go for funding.
Yeah.
To find that. So yeah, it's only by accident I found out a few places. I mean,
we bought a funding book. I don't know what it's called.
Hmm.
But it gives you all the funders in the UK.
Yeah.
That's £500. So someone's making money.
Yeah.
No, I don't think we did that well out of. We got a few grand here and there, but nothing major.
Yeah. Well, again, just funders asking me. So we got a grant for Rachel, my wife's salary. And we'd applied a couple of times and been knocked back. Then I spoke with someone and explained what we're doing. Because even trying to the questions that are asked on these application forms are irrelevant to what we're doing. And if you're not doing a food bank, if you're not doing an alpha, you're seen as, well, what are you doing then? How are you evangelizing? How are you reaching people? And we're like, well, by meeting with them and living with them and communicating with them and being the friends and sharing the Bible with them. So, yeah. So how we actually do successful ministry on the ground is seen as irrelevant to a lot.
Because we've grown up, and again, this is our end of the pool. What I mean by that is mercy ministry, social justice, ministries that come up to help the oppressed in society, they're all based largely on outcomes.
Mm.
I remember applying to a grant, and one of their questions was about measurable outcomes.
Mm.
What does that mean? Well, how many people are converted? How many people have eaten the food? How many and you've got to have all these measurable outcomes in order to justify the grant. I'm not saying they shouldn't have accountability, that's different, but how do you measure outcomes when you're sowing seed in the kingdom of God and Jesus says 75% of what you sow is going to fail? That's not a great measurable outcome, is it?
Yeah.
I've written that on a few forms, didn't get any funding, but it's a genuine point, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good thing. That's one of the points maybe we need to make in the book when we're thinking about funding and funders, is that, you know, maybe we just need such a radical rethink around our end of the pool. I read a brilliant book about housing. I can't remember what it's called now. A brilliant, I've read too many books, but this guy worked 35 years in social work, social care systems, and giving grants and working with people in need. And so his organization, he's part of the social care organization. The more they could prove outcomes, the more money they got. But the outcomes they had to prove to get money was that they were dealing, that they were helping the most like difficult or the most in need people in the communities. And so he said, here's what he noticed the problem. He had two lads came to see him. One was an they wanted to apply for some, let's just say, a food pamper or a grant or something, right? One of the lads came with him, and he was he's a tearaway, little rogue, always into trouble, getting up to no good all the time. And the other lad used to be a little rogue, but he'd got his life together. You know, got himself doing well in school, really making some great strides. And this social worker couldn't help the good lad improve his life, because he knew if he did, he'd lose funding. because he needed to help the bad lads to justify the work that he was doing. Yeah. And he said, not long after that, he resigned. Because he thought, what are we doing here? This poor, good, this good lad who needs the help, you know he's going to progress. He's completely out of the market. Where the young lad, who you know is going to abuse the system and he's just using it to milk it, he gets the money because it looks more favourable in his report. Yeah. Mad, isn't it?
Exact same thing happened to me just after I became a Christian. I stopped doing the doors because it was obviously it wasn't a good environment for me to be on as a new believer, and I needed a job. So I went down the job club, and they were giving out free mopeds and cash and training to people, mopeds so you could get to work, you know, to work interviews and stuff like that, and all kinds of grants for clothes for interviews and things like that. So I went down. Oh, and you could get a job on the. There was like guaranteed jobs if you did a 3-day training course with British Rail. So I went down, and the woman said, "Oh, are you an addict?" I said, "No, I'm clean now. I'm off the drugs." She was like, "Oh, have you been in prison recently?" I said, "No." She was like, "Oh, right. I can't help you then." I was like, "What?" She said, "Oh, these courses are only for people who are out of prison or addicts." She said, "Can you lie?" I said, "Well, no, I'm a Christian. The reason I'm off the drugs is I've just become a Christian." She was like, "Oh, I'm really, the only way I can help you is if you lie and say that you've got an addiction." There was one other reason. "Oh, if I'd have been on the dole for longer than 3 years." I said, "So if I take drugs, go to jail, and I'm on the dole for 3 years, you can help me?" And she was like, "Yeah, unfortunately." And there's all these like nutters driving around on these free mopeds that have gone to these interviews, like cocked it up on purpose, a bit like on Trainspotting where they take speed. Yeah. Then getting a free moped for the pleasure. And you just think of the millions of pounds wasted keeping people in poverty. It's horrendous, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's what we're up against. You think about it. I was saying this to a guy once. I said, I go to a church to do a presentation on 20 schemes, and I show some toothless drug addict with tattoos, an attitude problem. Yeah. The guy follows me up with pictures of sweet children. Sign of hunger, blah, 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 blah. Who's getting the money every time? Not that the kids should get the money. I'm not making that point, but you see what I'm saying? It's why guys from our communities, and I did it in the early days, you go to a church and you just sex it up. Mm. Oh, 25% of our church and 25% of our community, you know, they've only got one leg, and 300%, do you know what I mean? Addicted to crack, and we're like the fifth most violent neighborhood in Europe, and do you know what I mean? Because you're just trying to generate something in order to try and stimulate the giving of people who generally just completely bamboozled. That's what most Christians in the pulpit are like. They're not ungenerous, they're generous. They're just like, where the flipping heck do I give my money?
Yeah.
I think one of the articles which Steve Levy has written for us is give it to local churches. To support local churches, because we are never going to be able to compete with the sexiness of a multi-million pound mercy ministry, or 20 schemes can now, but we're not a mercy ministry. And so, you know, we've got a part of what we're trying to, the battle is trying to educate people, isn't it? And just even educate funders and saying, yes, you know, like some of our funders for our retrain, our back to work project, of course they want to see financial returns. We're putting it into businesses. The church, you know, planting ministry is not, we shouldn't be treating it like, you know, it's a business where we want to see all these so-called returns and bang for our buck. Otherwise, we're getting left behind. And actually, we are getting left behind. And we'll get further behind unless the system changes, right? Big questions, yeah?
What, sorry, bruv?
Big questions, these. Big issues. Yeah.
Well, he's another one. How do you decide whether a church needs funding, even if it's small? Because you could have a church that's doing absolutely nothing and detrimental to the community and alienating the people of that community. And that's why it's small, because they're not doing what they should be doing. Or you've got a church that's small because everyone they reach ends up dying of addiction or something, or the sins, or end up back in. Do you know what I mean? Because there's people who get saved who still have the consequences of the crazy living. So I was chatting yesterday about a woman who got saved, and 6 months later she was dead because of the years prior to getting saved of alcoholism. Mm-hmm. So there's reasons why people move from the estates because they're in temporary housing and things like that. So it's hard to build up a membership of Indigenous people. But then sometimes there's a failing church, and it's the fault of the church, not the community that it's in. So again, these are questions that need to be asked, and I don't think we should just assume because you're on a council estate that that church needs supporting.
No, I agree. I agree 100%.
Yeah. So again, it's not as simple as just sending money out, is it? I think there's a lot of conversations that still need to be.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So what's kept you in the game so long then? Because like some of the lads I'm talking to now, I'm like, lads, you don't know you're born. And they're like, well, you're only still in it because you've been hanging on the coattails of Mez. So you've been in it, what, nearly 20 years now? 20 years plus?
My 22nd year.
Yeah. So what's kept you in it then? Because obviously, like, my head was done in after 10 years of planning. I've been in this type of ministry since 2007, so a while, but not as long as you. And the responsibility wasn't on me until, 8 years ago to find the funding. And that's took its toll, and I felt like packing in a few times. What's been the secret to your longevity in this?
Well, apart from the obvious answer.
Yeah. But even with the obvious, whether it's your love for the Lord, it's his providence, it's his...
It's my love for the Lord and the doctrines of grace. There you go. And everybody hates that answer. I gave that answer to once in a church in Wales, and the guy was, what do you mean? What's it got to do with the doctrines of grace? Mm-hmm. The doctrines of grace keep me going because it's God who's sovereign. Mm-hmm. It's God who call his elect unto himself. My job is merely to preach the gospel and disciple people. And so people die, people walk away, people fail. Yeah, you get upset. Yeah, it's hurtful at times, but you rest on the fact of God's sovereignty. And that stops you actually from having a Messiah complex. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I married well. Mm-hmm. And I've got a good wife and a stable, solid family home life. Thirdly, our theological convictions around church polity. Interesting, isn't it, that we've seen a few high-profile guys go again this year. And again, when you get past all the smoke and mirrors, it comes down to polity once again. You know, I have got good elders around me and a good church that understands me. I've been with them for this, my 14th year, that has grown to my ministry and the ministry of others, and is 100% behind the vision of 20 schemes. Also, probably, my sense of humour keeps me going. I'm incredibly, as you know, witty. Although I'm saying that out of earshot of Miriam and the girls because they just call me a sad git. Survive on sarcastic humour. My background must play a key. I was thinking about this the other day. I come from a brutal background, as you know, and extremely brutal. Probably, I mean, it's brutal. And that probably hardened me over the years. And so I'm not easily emotionally put off guard. I don't tend to swing from one sort of mood to the next. I don't know why, but I'm quite stable. And I love pressure. And you've been around me when I've had 500 things going on. The Lord has blessed me with a
Fernando.
That's just quite cool under pressure. Do you know what I mean?
We're 500 grand short for this year. Let's go for a Nando's. That kind of attitude.
Did I do that one today?
Yeah. I think all the accountants were stressed out about the shortfall for the coming year, and you're like, the Lord will sort it. Fancy Nando's, Ian, and then you just walked off. And to be fair, I think someone rang and gave a big donation while we were having the Nando's.
Are we here? Yeah. Yeah, I never worry about the money. That's funny, right? And people go, you know, somebody once came and said, you only say that because you've got money. I'm like, you don't have a clue, mate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We had no money. 20 Skins had nothing. Not a lick. Miriam and I, the first 10 years of our ministry, had nothing. Not a lick. We flogged our guts out. We paid our dues. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? People think, oh, it's this, you know, because we raised like whatever it was, 1.7 million last year. We're like, it's like that. Like that's easy. It's not easy. You know, it's we've got to raise 2 million this year. I haven't got a clue where it's coming from, but I know that every year the Lord's provided. And so, yeah. Also, I'm just another thing that keeps me going, I suppose, is I'm just a massive risk taker. So I couldn't ever see myself being a sort of boring traditional dude that is happy to potter about keeping things ticking over, and you know, and that's good. Life and churches need those guys, but you know, I'm more of a 50 ideas before breakfast guy. And so yeah, a combination of things. So obviously the Lord above all things, and my background and personality, I think. And my marriage.
So here's the thing. So lots of lads like us, obviously my childhood was nothing like yours. It was a lot easier than yours. But come from a similar kind of...
That's hard for you, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But lads like us, there's a big failure rate, not just in ministry, but just even getting through the Christian walk.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you think we see so many women in the church, in our community, well, probably nationally, whatever community you're from, but women seem to do well, especially if they get saved later in life, but the men, flipping heck, we have so many car crashes. Why do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that's true in our church. I'd say it's about 50-50. Right. I think a lot of churches see more in women in their churches because they largely only see women converted in their churches. That's one reason, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's just a problem with both sexes. And again, I go back to the parable of the sower, right? The problem is not with the word of God or the gospel. The problem with the heart into which it's sown. And you know, we fight for poor people, you and I, and we fight for them loud and we fight for them hard, but we're not these romantic idiots who think of the noble poor. You know, they're sinners, aren't they? They're rats just like everybody else, and the concerns and the sin and the pride and the being caught up in this life, they're all, you know, factors. There are other factors which are more difficult, particularly underlying mental health issues, as we both know, is an absolute nightmare. It's hilarious, and not in a funny way, watching the news these days when talking, listening to reporters like talking about a tsunami of mental health issues among the middle class. In the I'm like, we've been living in this for a long time, mate. Yeah. Welcome to the party.
Yeah.
You know, abusive partners. Mm-hmm. You know, all sorts of issues why, as you well know, people end up walking away or have struggles growing. I think one of the reasons we probably have less struggles than most churches, and we do have struggles, but people seem to stick, is because there are a lot of people like us in our churches. There are a lot of people not like us. But if you come to a saved, in a largely middle-class church and go to a middle-class church, it's a nightmare, isn't it? Yeah. From our background, man or woman. I mean, middle-class view of discipleship is laughable.
Mm.
And their understanding of the kind of support and discipleship required to help a person from our backgrounds growing grace and truth and mature and even be considered a suitable candidate for future leadership, it's practically impossible, isn't it?
Yeah.
We are, I mean, I am a freak of the system.
Mm.
There's a Scottish phrase here called the myth of the laird of parts. And it basically says the education system or the theological education system is not against people from working class communities, and the proof they say is in you. So they would say, if it's that bad, how are you here?
Yeah,
yeah. How are you talking? And it's a myth that says, if you're here, the system works. Mm. But no, we're here despite massive, and we are talking, aren't we? We know each other's stories, massive obstacles to get where we are. And again, that is just the providence of God, the grace of God. And I'm hoping that your ministry, your work, our work with Acts 29, 20 schemes, the Ragged School, people are going to see that, Oak Hill, whatever it's called, Oak Hall.
Yeah, okay.
It's a good place, by the way. Great place. Does good stuff. But those sort of institutions or these gospel partnerships, come and get trained here. Actually, good. If that's your gig and you want to go and pastor in a nice middle-class church, go and get trained there. But if you want to pastor with us or plant with us, here are some serious, viable alternatives. Mm. And, I'm hoping that we'll be not the exception to the rule in the next 10 years, but we'll see more and more of our kids, right, coming through. Mm. But unfortunately, we have to eat shit to do it.
Mm. And again, it's just funny you were saying that. So the reason I'm still here, I suppose, is because of my background, my tenacity, that even if I'm not doing it for the Lord, I'll do it to prove the doubters wrong. And but then where you're pretty much level emotionally, I'm up and down emotionally, and that, I suppose, is your mental health illness.
Yeah.
I don't think you've noticed, Mess. I don't think you've put it around.
I'm still waiting for you to deliver me letters. I thought you'd bust it at one point.
You what, bro?
I'm still waiting for you to deliver me letters.
What letters?
Postman.
Oh, yeah.
I tell a lie. I do remember one occasion where you said, I was mourning about something, I can't remember what it was, and you said, oh, why don't you just shut up or something. Remember that? Oh, I can't remember what that was about.
No, that was when you were on the way at the airport with Miriam and you said to me, I can't believe I'm getting advice from you lunatic or something.
I can't remember, but I mean the thing is, our friendship's been good, hasn't it?
Yeah
it's good to have friends who are going to say I agree, and friends will also say, you know what though, maybe we're being dickheads here.
Yeah. No, that's definitely kept me in the game, having someone I know who understands me well enough to encourage me when I need encouraging, to give me a kick up the backside when I need that as well. And
we all need a friend in our life who'll give us their credit card one day and a boot the next.
I think that's probably why you're Esther's favourite preacher, because you're the only pastor who's ever given her a credit card and sent to her dad, make sure you buy her a Build-A-Bear, take her for a big massive burger and a movie.
And then, did you buy her a Build-A-Bear?
Yeah.
Nope. That's going back some time.
Yeah. Flipping heck. Yeah, that was the first time I handed my notice in.
that was pre-20 schemes, was it not?
No, it just started, it just kicked off, I think.
That's 7 or 8 years ago now.
Yeah, no, it was, but it was just, you just kicked off. It was when Matthew Spandler Davison was struggling to come to terms with your sense of humour. So it was... It was when Shabba used to tell you to behave because you'd upset Matthew.
Right, it's been an hour.
Yeah, all right, bruv.
We should do another one. We should do part two.
Yeah, we'll do another one, mate. It's just honestly, been good catching up, to be honest. It's been good catching up.
Great, isn't it? Yeah. It's good. It'll be good to catch up with you this week.
Yeah, looking forward to it, mate. I'll wear a mask and keep 2 metres away. Can you drink beer through masks in Scotland?
I'll just be in my underpants doing my things. Coughing.